This episode is filled with knowledge of one of the largest craft breweries in the United States. Dan is the area manager for Boston Beer Company and has been with the organization for almost a decade. He took time out of his Friday night coaching football to talk about redefining both brands in a modern-day world of over 7,000 breweries, the future expansion of different products, and reaching out to consumers that are not their typical market. CJ, data analyst for Dogfish Head, helps us finish the show by talking about the high price point of Utopias, his thoughts on ABI, and teaches us about the caution cap on Dogfish Head beers. All this and more on this return episode of Better on Draft.
Beer is in a bottle, can, or glass. Kick back. Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 299, Better on Draft Podcast. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. We have a big episode for you today. We are excited to have them in studio, but let's go around, get a hold of the host, and see what everybody is drinking, starting with Dan. Dan, what do you got?
Oh, you know, it being 4 o'clock and 100 degrees here, I decided to bust out a Utopia's Barrel-Aged Worldwide Stout.
Dan's going hard at 4 p.m. Wouldn't expect anything less. Robert, what do you got?
As soon as I find my bottle opener, I'll be cracking these open, but I have a, I guess you could pretty much say a vintage bottle of Dogfish Head 120 minute, that was bottled back in 2016. And I also have, as I will probably be sipping on during the duration, is a Sam Adams American Creek, an ale age with Balaton cherries in oak barrels, which presumably was made probably in like 2015, 2014. I guess we will see how it tastes.
All right. We also have Wendy. Wendy, what do you have?
Well, apparently I'm taking it easy this time because I have a Sam Adams Wicked Double Hazy IPA. And I also have a 60-minute IPA from Dogfish Head.
And for myself, I have a 90-minute IPA. Which is going to be interesting for me because we all know my feelings on IPAs, which means that just in case I'm not a big fan, I'm going to be crushing it down with a vodka crush, blood orange, and mango Dogfish Head culinary craft cocktail. So with that means we have a bunch of Dogfish Head. Everyone knows how this game goes. We have Dogfish Head in studio, starting with CJ. CJ, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do with Dogfish Head?
Hey, everybody. My name is CJ Novak. I am the divisional analyst for the New England division of BBC, Boston Beer Company. I started with Dogfish Head back in 2017. I've been into craft beer for about 25 years, and I worked in it for almost 6 years at this point. So it's kind of funny. I am currently drinking a 90 minute, just like Kenneth there. So we're good to go.
And for those of you who are unaware, Dogfish Head does have a partner in crime, a parent company, if you will. We have Dan from the Boston Beer Company. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do, and explain to everyone why it looks like you're being kidnapped.
How's it going, everybody? Dan Petrozella. I'm the area manager for the states of Maine and New England, here for the Boston Beer Company. So I control the sales teams in each one of those states, working very closely with CJ as well. And it looks like I'm being kidnapped right now because I'm in my car hiding during a high school football game that I coach. So excuse me if I do have to jump a little early. And for me, it's water, some Great Poland Spring water from the state of Maine.
Well, while we have you here, one of the things that I ask a lot of guests, we had the opportunity this year to chat with Clown Shoes. And being a brewery that has been in distribution, especially in Michigan, for decades now, what is the, like, how do you currently and continue to redefine Boston Beer Company, Dogfish Head, to keep your guys' beer in the refrigerators of craft beer drinkers like us who are, to be honest, you know, we just go to whatever is the next newest and newest made?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, because to start with, there are just so many great breweries, great brewers out there. I think there's upwards of over 7,000 in the United States right now. Here in the state of Maine and Vermont, there are two meccas. Also go along with your question, what I can tell you is that, we have some great campaigns, some great brand team individuals that work cross-functionally with us in the sales department to put together great campaigns and execute them out in the market.
All right. Well, I was not planning to push it real fast, but I do need to push it over to Rob. Rob, take it away.
All right. Let me actually unmute myself here. So actually, once again, while you're still here, one of the things that I wanted to ask about in terms of the market, and we've talked about this with other breweries like Shiner, Firestone Walker, I think other breweries like that. But as craft beer drinkers and seeing craft beer being marketed, that we always feel like there is a huge and a bigger opportunity with marketing beer to women consumers and people of color. But we also, at least myself personally, I don't see that there's a lot of brands that really speak in those areas. I'm curious, are there any ideas that maybe you would like to pursue in reaching these groups, or is there something that Boston Beer Co. / Dogfish Head that is possibly doing on a scale that would market towards those areas?
Yeah, totally, Rob. And I got to give you a shout out for your beer of choice, American Creek, one of my favorites. It's a beer that's made with Cosmic Mother Funk as the base, different levels blended in all of our barrelroom collections. So that's one of my favorites. So shout out to you right there. To go along with your question right there, we have the autonomy sometimes to craft, local campaigns, local promotions tied together with different like local programs, different benefits that we can, work alongside and support. Overall, Boston Beer Company strives to be, deliver the best quality products in every category. And we kind of try to speak to everybody because, one of the best things I like about craft beer is, and about consumers, including myself, is that everybody's taste buds are different. So we do have like differing marketing campaigns, to go, towards different drinkers, like you're saying. But ideally, the goal per brand would be to get those beverages or liquids in the hands of everybody of legal drinking age, that is.
Of course.
Of course.
that's always important to make sure, of legal drinking age. Okay, that's good. Another one that I wanted to jump into. I always feel like with these questions, you're like just jumping in, just like hardcore with these serious questions. It's so early. But I'm going to throw this one out here, is that it was another question that came from another interview that we had. I believe this was from Firestone Walker. And it was mentioned, the person that we were interviewing, which I'm sorry, I cannot remember his name right now. But he had said in an interview that the Sam Adams portfolio is only 9% of their total sales comes from Sam Adams, and a large chunk comes from Truly Hard Seltzers. I'm curious if like the information that possibly you have seen, if that is true, and like if so, or maybe if not, what makes Truly such a big seller?
Yeah, so when I started in 2013, fast forward right now to 2022, we have brand segments that didn't even exist, so to say. I can't really speak to like those specific sales stats or like percentages. But what I can say, like specifically to New England and Northern New England, where I work, is IRI data, which is scan data. Right now, most of that is being driven by the non-alcoholic segment, PABs, and also imports. Minus imports, we're fortunate enough to play in those other two segments, along with some others. Truly Hard Seltzer, just like the whole hard sparkling water category, six, seven years ago didn't exist whatsoever. So not to say that the whole seltzer category is a phenomenon, but kind of a once in a lifetime thing that, once it didn't exist, then boom, it's here. There was a boom for cider, even in the early like 2012, 2013, I believe. But I'm just always asking myself, what's next?
And there's so much that and it just kind of lends to what you're saying, is that there's so much out there. Before I get to my next one, Nick is in the group. He's in the chat. Nick has entered the chat. How's it going, Nick? What you drinking over there?
Not only entered the chat, but took over as host, because this is my Zoom channel. Anyway, I'm starting off with the Sam Adams. What was that?
Don't tell Ken.
No, wow. I'm drinking the Sam Adams Just the Haze, the NA. I'm starting with that. And when I got this, I got very, very interested. And this will be my next one from Dogfish Head Distilling, the Vodka Crush.
Ooh.
So I'm very, we're going to have to talk about this.
I got, like your style.
I got some questions about this right here. But let's Ken, continue.
Ken is getting ready to crush that one too. Now, I read in an article that back in July, there's the teapot line of cannabis-infused iced teas were hitting some Canadian markets. The thing I was, and the question I was kind of going to go into was actually what you were just mentioning about there's being so many different choices that are out there right now, and with craft beer, obviously became ciders, the seltzers, the non-alcoholic beers were actually more non-alcoholic beers because we've had them already in the past. Gluten-free beers, the RTDs, and now the cannabis drinks. In your opinion, is there a point in your mind where there's too much variety for maybe a fear of just spreading the options too thin? Or is this just what the field is, what you have to work with, and you got to sell what you got to sell to who's going to buy it?
Oh, that's for me. Sorry about that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I like quoted earlier, over 7,000 brewers alone within craft beer within the U.S. Now those craft brewers are also playing in other subsegments. So a lot of people being invited to the party. And you know, there's definitely a lot of homes for them out there. But yeah, at some points, it could definitely be overwhelming. One thing I really do enjoy about Boston beer is, no matter what like segment or category, we are in or represent, we always strive to make the highest quality products for the consumer. So that, subdivision that you mentioned, because of legalities, we're not able to try, or if there are any samples, just yet, but you know, always looking forward to like the next innovation, the next thing that could take off, and what our representation from our brewers is of that style segment category.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And I'll add in that, like, I think that the merging of Dogfish Head and BBC with Sam Adams, I think that we're going to create such a kind of like a laboratory of like creating these like interesting new innovative things between the two of us. That and obviously now that we're one, but I mean, Teapot, I think, is one that like Dan said, you know, due to like federal regulations, we can't really do much with it outside of, you know, inside of the U.S. It's functioning up in Canada at this point, but we can't do much with it. So it's kind of like, you know, just it's a big innovative category that we have here. So it's got a good future.
Right. And hopefully we'll start to see, obviously there's still more regulations that are here in the U.S. that have to change before we start seeing it a bit more pronounced in the U.S. So it's good. Yeah, a lot of them. But I guess it's good to have a friendly neighbor up north to be able to test it up there and before we can really bring it to market here in the U.S. Exactly. But CJ, I had a question for you. I've heard that you're not a very big fan of ABI. I'm curious, is this a big beer thing? Is it they're buying up small breweries thing? Is there something more to that?
It's not really like, I'm not like, I think it's more so just like the aggressive tactics that go into it. Like the buying up of like craft category, you know, craft breweries to basically create like, you know, kind of like the appearance of like being a craft brewery type of thing. I'm not a fan of misrepresenting of like what someone is, if that makes any sense. that's my primary disagreement with it. There's a lot of like weird tactics that go on with big beer, and that's my biggest gripe with it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Does it make you feel like when those small breweries are bought up, and we get this a lot with some of the breweries that, you know, once they get bought out, it's like, oh, they're not craft. They're bought by the man. Yeah. Now I'm not going to buy any beer from them anymore. Does that, like, even with them still being there, does that really matter with that brewery, the brewery itself, not necessarily ABI and their tactics, just the Correct. Brewery that is being acquired?
No, I will tell you that years ago, CJ of like 30 years old probably would think about that way. I'm 51, by the way. It's been a long time since I've been 30. No, I mean, at this point, it's like, you know, honestly, it's like if you create a brewery and you create any business, to be honest with you, and you build it up to the point that like you can sell it for like whatever amount of money you want to sell it for, I mean, by all means, it's your brewery, sell it. I mean, go for it. It doesn't mean that, like, you know, honestly, I drink some beers that have been acquired by ABI because, I mean, they're good beers. I mean, Goose Island is like, you know, a spectacular freaking brewery. And it's like they put out freaking all of their Bourbon County stuff. And it's like it's a beautiful beer. So I'm not going to, like, you know, disparage a brewery that was created and then, you know, rose to the point where they could be acquired and, like, you know, take off like that. So,
yeah, no. it's just like going from the minors to the majors.
Exactly.
All right, I'm gonna pass this over to Ken. He's got some.
Thank you very much. So before I know Dan, we're on a time crunch for you, so I want to get one more question at least from you before you go run plays over at the high school football game. my question is very simple, because Nick. I had the opportunity to go to your guys' brewery and taste a lot of the R&D and distro that you guys have locally. Is there a beer that Sam Adams made, Boston Beer Co. made, that you wish they would bring back? What's on your wish list?
Oh, now that is a great question. All right, so I think I need to name two of them.
Okay, name two. There's no rules. Okay. We make it up as we go.
That's what I like. So there is a beer that I had. It was part of our what we call the Brewmaster series. First of all, let me throw this out there. When I first started with the Boston Beer Company, just with the Sam Adams brand, over 63 different beers in rotation just for that given year that hit the shelves, not just R&D. One of those beers that I fell in love with was called Black Lager. Looked like a iced cold blue black, no cream. And it was a very light body. Some of that roasted malt in there really brought out kind of a little bit of astringent flavors. But it was so light, so smooth. That is definitely one from the vault. And then the other beer... you know, it's a toss up. I think I'm going to have to go with Millennium because I had never got to try that beer. I was not of age when that was first released, but I would definitely love to try that one.
What do you think? I guess my other question, when a lot of people talk about craft beer, they obviously say, you know, oh, well, if it's bought by ABI InBev or if it's bought by Molson Coors. But then there's this like second tier in which you guys in Yingling are kind of on your own island. There's you are a fraction of the guys above, and a lot of the people are a fraction of what you are. What is your thoughts when people say, oh, you're not craft beer? And the second question is how much money, because this is what I've heard all the time, how much money did you guys pay the Brewers Association to change the barrelage limit from 2 million to 6 million?
Association. Can you repeat the question once again?
Yeah, so how much money did you pay the Brewers Association to change the barrelage limit from 2 million to 6 million so that Boston Beer Company was still craft beer?
Yeah, to my knowledge, I've never heard of anybody paying the Brewers Association anything. Don't that would think be above my hard. Pay grade. So,
yeah. Dan, that's a joke, by the way. Don't think too hard.
That is a
fun rumor that gets told all the time. That you guys and Dick Yingling, paid a bunch of money to the Brewers Association to raise the limit from 2 million to 6 million so that you guys would still be considered craft. So we know it's true. We know you just can't tell us the amount, but is it, you know, $10,000, $100,000? Like, can you give me a thumbs up? We can't even see you much anymore.
Ken, you're such a jerk.
I know. I mean, it was like trading places. They just gave $1.
The initial question, which we'll leave you with, is you know, when people discuss Sam Adams and Yingling, a lot of people don't say you guys are craft or independent because you guys are just too big. What is your thoughts on those sentiments?
Sure. First of all, first time I heard about that rumor, I'm going to add it to my book of hundreds of rumors I've heard.
Yeah,
that's why I love rumors. But you know, there's a lot of definitions out there. You know, it all comes down to, I get to see what our founder of the Boston Beer Company, Jim Cook, how heavily involved he is, and he's still the majority shareholder. So we're a public traded company. Final decisions all go through him. But just the involvement from him is still going and getting every first keg from any of our breweries that are brewing a Boston Lager and trying that to make sure it's up to his quality standards. And the first time he had it and brewed it in his and just every brand plan. We have our national meeting coming up in a week, and, you know, he's there talking to everybody, mingling. He's leading the charge, telling us what 2023 is going to look like, everything we have to look forward to, and all our hard efforts that we've done here in 2022. But yeah, I don't know. When people say that we're too big, I try to ask them, all right, name more than five beers or like five products from us. And, you know, they normally can't. So to me, you know, it's all a matter of perception, and people may perceive us as bigger sometimes, but, you know, we're still a little fish in a big pond.
And in addition to that, I mean, you know, as far as like the size of Boston Beer in comparison to the conglomerates, we are nothing compared to what ABI, Molson Coors, you know, like we are nothing compared to that. So, you know, yeah, I mean, maybe in the craft scene, we appear to be big, and we are. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say we're not, but at the same time, you know, let's keep it in perspective.
Yeah. Thank you very much, everybody. Good luck with the rest of the podcast. I got to jump and go yell at some players.
Thanks, Dan.
Good luck with the game.
Go team.
Go team. Go yell at kids. I mean, that's definitely fair, because, I mean, does like Molson and ABI report their barrelage numbers? I mean, we see everything with we see everything from the craft industry and the Brewers Association, but I can't say that I've ever seen what the barrelage numbers are for Miller or ABI in terms of what they do. But I know that it's just like what you're saying, CJ, is that it's pretty damn big, because they are worldwide. They're putting all of their beers from, you know, they're probably selling kegs in Antarctica. I mean, I don't know.
And additionally, they're foreign owned. So, I mean, you know, Boston Beer is 100% American owned. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of, hey,
yeah,
you know, we're at the, you know, I won't say we're at the top of the food chain for the American owned. I think that probably goes to like some other larger craft breweries in the country, but we're up there.
I'm sure you could get the barrelage numbers if you went to their, you know, quarterly review or year end review on their portfolio, saying how much that they made, and their like stock, like whatever it's called at the end of the year. I can't think of it. But the Brewers Association does release all of the breweries under it. So you could find out how much like Goose Island made, or how much like Blue Moon made, or Lion and Kugel. So you're able to find this information, but it's not as easily as accessible as the rest. But I'm going to pass it over to Mr. Cook over here. Dan, how's it going?
Good. So CJ, I got one really important question I got to ask you. And I, you know, I apologize if you don't have the answer to this, but I hope you do. What the heck happened to Palo Santo Marone, and when's it coming back?
Dude, I wish I knew. I mean, honestly, Palo Santo Moron was one of those beers that, like, there's a couple of beers that we have, we never retire a beer. We do what we call put it on hiatus, which means there's always the option that it will come back. For me, Indian Brown Ale, IBA, was one that we recently put on hiatus a couple of years ago, and I really miss that beer. I will tell you that in coastal Delaware, where the Milton Brewery is and the pub is, every now and then we have this great brewer down there that that will actually, you know, put together like these small batches of stuff. So Palo Santo is not on that list, but every now and then it's kind of like, you know, you get some, it's kind of like, you know, these beers that have been put on hiatus and like they'll come back every now and then. Palo Santo requires those Palo Santo tanks that we have and large amounts of liquid in order to fill it up, in order to get that beer. So honestly, I'm not sure what's going on with that, so I can't really give you a great answer, but again, it's never retired. It's always just kind of like on hiatus.
Understandable. Now, you know, Dogfish Head, it is pretty IPA heavy. Actually, one of the first craft beers I had outside of the old school ones, talking about, Ken helped me, that damn red ale that everyone used to drink. It's slipping my mind for Killian's? Whatever reason. Killian's. Thank you. Yeah. Before that, Dogfish Head, when I was briefly living in the DC area, was one of the first craft beers I actually ever had outside of things like the Killian's. Talk to us a little bit about some of the other beers that Dogfish Head makes. Everyone knows the 120 minutes, the 90 minutes, the 60. Talk to us a little bit about the portfolio and what are some of your highlights? What are some of your favorites in there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's 120, which is like, you know, the kind of like the hop head, you know, like the masterful hop head IPA, which is, you know, it tends to be between like 15 and 18%. We actually just released a variant of Worldwide Stout, which is the, we're doing Wake Up Worldwide Stout, which is actually like a coffee infused Worldwide Stout. So again, it's like this big imperial stout that, that we're using with a local, coffee brewer in, Rehoboth, Delaware. And they, you know, they provided the coffee. So like, it's going to be like a nice coffee infused, you know, 15 to 18%, whatever the ABV comes out to. That's currently going into distribution at this point. Currently drinking the 90 minute, which is like kind of like the legendary, you know, it's the continually hopped IPA that we actually, you know, the whole story behind this is like the continual hopping is something where Sam actually was watching this like a cooking show where like the chef was taking, you know, basically taking like pepper and throughout the boil of the pep, you know, throughout the boil of the soup was like sprinkling pepper throughout the entire time. And he decided he would try to like do this whole thing with like this beer where he would continually hop it. So what he ended up doing was using like this electric football table. And I'm sure you've heard this story, I'm sure. But basically it bounced hot pellets into the boil, and like over a period of time, obviously 90 minutes of the boil, it came up with this beer that like, it wasn't cloyingly bitter, but it had this nice smooth hop addition to it. It wasn't hop overboard, but at the same time, it was just kind of like, it was there. You could get it. Very smooth IPA. So, I mean, that's the beer that I'm currently drinking. And obviously a couple of you are too. 60 minute is kind of like a little brother to that. Again, continually hopped, 6%, so a little bit younger. I remember years ago Sam saying that someone asked him if, like, you know, if we would ever do a session IPA, and of course we have Slightly Mighty now, but at that point we didn't have it. So he basically said, like, you know, 60 minute, it's kind of our session IPA. People just need to step up. So kind of a funny, like, okay, well, yeah, 6% session. And aside from that, I mean, Sequench is the other one that we kind of like, you know, we take great pride in. It's our session sour. Sequench is actually, it's three beers. It's a Kolsch, Berliner Weiss, and a Goza that we actually brew separately, blend them together with crushed black limes, add some Maine sea salt into it, and it becomes almost like a margarita flavor type of like a sour, session sour, which I'm thinking most of you have had that before. We like to play a lot of games with it down in Delaware where we would like add shots of tequila to it to make it like a margarita. But you know, it's a great beer. And aside from that, we do some one-offs here and there. We've got, we mentioned 120. I know coming up, we've got, and we've done in the past, we've got 120. And this is the benefit of like the merging with Boston Beer is we've got 120 aged in Utopia's barrels. So, it's a great kind of, collaboration there that we can kind of do now that we're like all merged together. Those are some of the ones that I can think of off the top of my head.
Now, again, you might not have the answer to this, but I'm just kind of curious because, I love Worldwide Stout, probably one of my favorite stouts, but it's pretty easy to it's kind of like time traveling. You can drink a few of these and you wake up, it's Friday night when you drink them, you wake up on Tuesday.
Oh yeah.
it's one of those kind of beers. Had there ever been any talks or any plans to make, maybe a 10% stout? It doesn't have to be a 6%. I mean, we drink pretty big beers, especially when it comes to stouts all the time. Is there any plans or talks to make something that's not going to knock you into next week after you drink two of them?
From my position, I would love to answer that question, but I mean, that's more on the, kind of like the brewing side that they can kind of talk about that stuff. I'm less in the planning side than I am. I'm more on the wholesaler distributor side. So it's kind of like, they handle all of that planning stuff. So I can't really answer a question like that. I'm sure there's all kinds of crazy ideas going on in there. And like, I'm sure people throw stuff at the wall, some stick, some don't, it's kind of, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Wendy, you had a question?
I do. So since we're talking about products, I'm going to start off by saying I'm a huge fan of cheese. Mm-hmm. So I really want to know more about this perfect pairing ale that I've been reading so much about the last few weeks.
Perfect pairing. Honestly, I wish I knew about more about it. I know that it's included in the fall variety pack. It's a collaboration with the Cabot, the cheese, the cheese company. Aside from that, I know that it's a beer that you could pair with cheese, and supposedly the flavors and the hop additions will actually kind of accentuate the flavors from the cheese. But I don't have a whole lot of information about what goes on with that beer, because it's not something that we're going to be putting into wide distribution aside from being in the variety pack. So it's kind of it's sort of a one-off beer.
Okay. That's the off-centered party pack, right?
Yeah. Fall VP is coming out now. So,
yes, I have been looking at all the reviews that have been coming out the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, I need to try that so much. So I also have a quick question, because I'm the feel good sap. I'm the volunteer of the group. I cannot figure out how I end up doing it all the time, but I saw somewhere that there was a fundraiser at a Two Fat Guys in Hockessin, Delaware, to help veterans adopt dogs, that will feature a keg of 120 minute IPA that has been aging since 2014. Yeah. So I'm curious, how much does a 6 ounce pour of an 8-year-old 120 minute IPA go for?
That's a very good question. And again, I'm going to have to kind of say, I don't really know. I'm actually up here in South Portland, Maine. So, I mean, that's something that was planned down in Delaware. So, unfortunately, I don't really have an answer on that.
So, do you suggest aging the beer that long?
Oh, 120?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I have
sampled 2010 120s, and basically 120 turns into a kind of like a barley wine. The hops kind of fall out of it. It takes on a little bit more sweetness, bitterness kind of goes away. So yeah, I mean, I've had 2010s that were definitely very much drinkable. So very much an drinkable beer.
I was going to say with the 2016 that I drank, that is exactly kind of what you're saying, that it starts to turn into a barley wine. There's a little bit of a sweetness. There's this inexplicable date flavor that's coming from it that I was not expecting, and I'm glad I enjoyed it, but at the same time I wish it was still sitting in the basement right now.
I am a huge sucker for events like that, so if anybody else wants to know if they made their goal, I will let you know, as of yesterday, their Facebook still said they were tallying the numbers. So we'll post it on the Facebook if it, once I get that information. But I also wanted to kind of go back a little bit to your other question about the Wake Up Worldwide Stout. I guess my first question is, why mess with such a good thing as the Worldwide Stout?
Well, I mean, everybody does it. I mean, you know, it's basically like you will have a solid beer and like, you know, you take out, you do variants. It doesn't mean you get rid of the original. You just every now and then kind of throw a variant in, kind of say like, hey, you know, we're having fun with something. And then also, you know, it supports a local coffee company in Rehoboth that, we have a good partnership with them. And it's kind of fun. I mean, that's the whole idea behind Dogfish Head, is like having fun with beer. It's not sticking to like, you know, the norms, the whole off-centered ethos, the whole just kind of like, you know, let's just kind of like, you know, let's see what we can do with this. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I've not yet had the Wake Up Worldwide Stout, but the fact that it's being released tells me that my sensory people have actually said like, hey, it's good. So
I'm looking for it because it says mid-September. So I've already started looking.
Yeah, it's rolling on trucks right now. So
I will definitely keep paying more attention then. My last question though about that is, what is the Caution Cap series?
Caution Cap series, basically it indicates that it's an ageable beer. So anytime you see that green cap, it means that no matter whether it's like 120, like IPA, Worldwide Stout, you know, like anything else, like it's going to be something that you can actually put in your cellar and like keep going. Honestly, there are a couple of other beers that, you know, have just like the red cap. I mean, you know, this guy, you know, that, you know, you can successfully age it to a degree, but not for a long term. But the whole idea of the caution cap is, one, it's a big beer. It's going to be a big beer. It's going to have a lot of alcohol in it, which allows it to age over time. So that's the whole idea of the caution cap.
That's awesome. Nick?
Gonna go a little bit on the personal route on the question, CJ. So as I was trying to get prepped for the show, had to dive into your LinkedIn for a little bit. You've only been with Dogfish Head / Boston Beer Co. for just a couple of years.
Yeah.
When Dogfish Head got purchased by Boston Beer Co. and call it a merger, call it an acquisition, whatever it may be. Were the nerves going high because you didn't know what was going to happen to you personally? Because when you get purchased by, I mean, Dogfish Head was a pretty considerable brewery on its own up until its purchase. And then
right. The
bomb gets dropped that Boston Beer Co. is buying Dogfish Head. Were the nerves up there when you heard the news? Or was there some kind of assurances that you guys and DFH were going to be okay in the end?
I think it was probably kind of a split, you know, between like certain people. I mean, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, for my wife and I, my wife was actually the procurement buyer for doctors for packaging. When she and I were, the funny thing is she and I were actually down in Nashville, North Carolina, when this was announced. So friends of ours, Amy and Tara, were actually texting us what was going on at this company meeting. And, you know, we heard all these rumors of what was going on. And like, they texted like, oh, well, we're joining Boston Beer. And for she and I, it was an immediate kind of like, well, there's a whole shit ton of opportunity here. I think for other people, they kind of like, it didn't really fit what they wanted to do. So we had some people leave, but I mean, at the same time, it's kind of like for us, I think it was a logical logical move because, you know, Sam and Jim had been friends for, you know, decades at this point, I guess. And, you know, they've worked together a long time and kind of like, you know, you're seeing a lot of this in the craft market where like, you know, you've got, you know, craft breweries that are kind of like merging, pulling together. You've got these, you know, things going on. It's kind of like, you know, it's a survival mode at this point because we all know that craft beer is kind of like, you know, shelf space has kind of dropped a bit when it comes to that, you know, like seltzers and things of that come in. And RTDs and like, you know, and the irony of that is like, you know, Boston Beer obviously produces a lot of those. So, and you know, those are things, you know, you're pointing that out. I mean, those things are flying off the shelves right now. So, you know, whether it's that or our beer, I mean, we're stoked about the fact that like we're still relevant and like doing great stuff. So
I'm glad that the nerves weren't that high. I'm glad that it's for you and your wife, it was a seamless transition. It seems like maybe a few bumps, but I'm happy for you guys, because we always hear these bad stories about what happens when smaller guys, or, you know, maybe in DFH's case, maybe not so small. I was, you know, I would say a medium sized fish in the craft beer pond that we live in, but, now it's just a matter of who's going to be next, I guess. Like, you know, but, you know, I don't have a crystal ball in front of me. you mentioned the RTDs, and I wanted to talk a bit. Ken and I already showed the cans on the camera once already. I'm going to show it again. I cracked open the Vodka Crush, and just really quickly, it's awesome. It's very good. Very, very good. Was not expecting that. But on that note, when I first heard of Dogfish Head for the very, very first time, I always associated DFH with the IPAs, the 60 minutes, the 90 minutes, the 120, the 517. Don't quote me on that one. Maybe you guys can use it. But anyway, IPAs and the stouts. We already mentioned Worldwide Stout. There was Beer for Breakfast as well, which is another good one. Beer for Breakfast is another good beer, too.
Don't forget Dan's favorite beer, the Pumpkin Ale.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the pump. We should make that all year. Yeah.
It's so good.
Sarcasm on Dan's part, but anyway. So when I hear DFH, I think about those two styles. Now you guys entered the RTD market with something like this.
Yep.
When I first saw it, I didn't know what to expect. Do you suppose, and maybe this is purely opinion, your own opinion, or not an official position, but maybe your opinion, do you feel like getting into like the RTD market might take away from IPAs and stouts that DFH puts out? Or do you feel like this is just another feather in the hat for DFH Boston Beer Co. that you guys are going to take off with something like this? I mean, again, drinking this, it's pretty damn good. But what are your thoughts about DFH diving into the RTD market? And do you think that this is going to be another big staple for you guys?
100%. It's another feather in the cap. We have been distilling since, I think, 2002, I think. You know, Sam actually, he cobbled together this still, you know, based on, like, stuff that he found at a scrap yard and, like, actually started distilling in the original Dogfish Brew Pub. But now we have these stills in the Milton Brewery that are just these massive stills. You know, we've been distilling since 2002. We actually have a lot of spirits that we do, just straight spirits. So this is a logical route, because obviously RTDs are taking off in the marketplace. But, you know, we use purely culinary ingredients in these. So, you know, that's why they have such a short shelf life and things like that. So, I mean, it's all real fruit juice. It's all real herbs, real, you know, things like that, that, like, you know, basically it kind of sets us apart, I think, from like other RTD producers where, like, you know, they're mass producing this stuff. I mean, there's a lot of hands on with these things. So I think that, like, it's definitely a big feather in our cap, and like, it's taking off. And I'll tell you from the, from my position where I'm with I'm a divisional analyst, and like, I work with wholesalers, they can't keep it, you know, on the floor. I mean, it goes out constantly. Right. So
good. We got one question from the chat, and then we're going to pass it back over to Ken. So the question from one of our viewers in the chat, one of the best things about craft breweries is their connection to communities. Can you talk to us a little bit about the philanthropic branch of DFH and some of the causes that you guys at DFH support?
Yeah. We did, you know, early on with Dogfish Head, we had what was called Beer and Benevolence. And this was a program that was actually started off by Mark Carter. Actually, I think it was started off by Mariah, the co-founder of the brewery, Mariah Calcione. But Mark Carter headed up for years. And the primary thing that we did with the beer and benevolence was we worked with Habitat for Humanity. And in coastal Delaware, we would go out and work with the Habitat Humanity to build houses. So every year we would have what was called Benevolence Day, where the entire brewery would basically shut down and everybody would go out to various parts of like coastal Delaware to help build these houses. Now, that's the benefit of merging with Boston Beer is now that we have a huge footprint across the country. So we've expanded that benevolence across the country so that we can actually like do a lot of benevolent things and philanthropic things across the country. Because, I mean, we're reaching into spaces that, Dogfish originally didn't really have that acquisition, that ability to like be able to get in there. So it's really kind of cool that we can kind of do that, the Boston area, obviously Milton, Delaware. Now we have like salespeople across the country, like every state in the country. We've got people that can kind of go out and like, do this stuff. And it's a continually expanding philanthropic thing that Mariah is actually driving at this point. So it's pretty expansive at this point.
All right. There you go. Going to turn it back over to Ken to get ready to close us out.
All right. Before we go into the final questions, there is one question that I think is on the mind of a lot of people when they talk about craft beer. Obviously, price is a massive thought and theory. And one of your guys' biggest beers that you sell is the Utopias, which has a hefty price tag, should you be able to find it. For those who are seeing it on the shelf and they're like, why the hell is a beer, near $200? Can you give us a little bit of a breakdown as to why that beer has a suggested retail price of that?
I honestly wish I could. it's one of those things that I've worked for Boston Beer for 3 years at this point, and Utopias, I know that there's a lot that goes into it. It's I'm going to hold this bottle up here. I mean, it's a handcrafted bottle, and like the handcrafted bottle has nothing to do with the fact that the liquid inside is something that, has been crafted. I mean, I can't even speak to what they do with it because I'm not on the brewing side, but I'm kind of going in an alley of saying like, I don't really know. If that makes any sense.
It's always funny how there's so like every 2 years someone will post an article about the states that banned that beer. I believe because of the ABV, but yeah. I guess from having it and drinking it, regardless of price, is it worth every penny?
I had it up, and I was at an event up in Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, couple of months ago, and I had it up there, and it comes off more like a liqueur than it does like a beer. I mean, it's a very cool beer experience, and I don't think you could put a price tag on tasting it, and for lack of a better term, the effects that it gives you. it's a fun beer. It's something fun to have. I understand the price is up there, but at the same time, it's like I can't really address why that is there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Here in Michigan, we can't get it for anything cheaper than I believe $250. I think is the cheapest I've seen.
Yeah, it's expensive. It's expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, as we end the show with our final questions going around the horn. We will start with Wendy. Wendy, what is your final question for CJ here?
What is your favorite style of beer? No, not what is your favorite. What is the style of beer you would like to see more of from either of your companies?
West Coast IPAs, 100%. I'm starting to see those creep up at like local breweries, and I miss good, solid, just kind of like bite you in the face West Coast IPAs. So those are the ones that I'm looking for. I mean, Stone IPA and like, all those like San Diego breweries came out with like the intensely hot IPAs. I love those things. So those are the ones that like I kind of look for, and like I'm starting to see it a bit more. So it's exciting to me.
Dan.
All right. Found an interview that you did about 4 years ago. I'm curious if the answer is still the same. What's your favorite beer that's a non-Dogfish Head beer?
Favorite beer that's a non-Dogfish beer. Yeah, that's hard because honestly, it's like every beer I have, I love. And, you know, not every beer I have, I love. But I mean, it's, I'll tell you that, you know, here we go. Main Beer Company Dinner.
Ooh.
Main Beer Company Dinner is a solid beer. It's a clarified double IPA. It's just a great beer.
Great choice. Back in 2018, you said Bell's Two Hearted.
I still actually just the other night I had a Bell's Two Hearted. And like Bell's Two Hearted knocked Pliny off of the
Symergy list.
Yeah. One of the few IPAs I like. I agree with you. It's a good beer.
Yeah.
Nick, what's your final question?
CJ, what beer are you drinking this weekend that is not a Boston Beer Co. beer or a DFH beer that you will be enjoying this weekend?
That's going to be a long list, dude.
Well, you mentioned let's do the first three. Let's do the first three that comes to mind.
Okay, let's see. Austin Street, Lone Pine, Good Fire, Foundation, probably some Battery Steel. I mean, I love the local Portland beer scene. It's just amazing. So it's, you know, there's any number of beers I'll be touching. I know we're talking about going, my wife and I are talking about going to Four River Brewing tomorrow, which is like just up the road from us. And they're cranking out some great stuff, but you know, it's I have a fridge full of Dogfish here, and when I'm not drinking it, I go for the local.
Foundation is one of the breweries that's in the that like collaborative space, isn't it?
Yep, Allagash. It's like Allagash is right here. So you got Foundation, you got Battery Steel, Austin Street, you've got Definitive right there. My neighbor actually is funny. He's an Allagash brewer. So he and I are always passing beers over our fence. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I know Definitive was very, very good because that's the one, like, along with Allagash is in its own little area, in that the main building.
Right.
But I believe it was what's the one that's on the end closest to the main road? So not at like the way they get to Allagash, but that road right before it. It's right on the corner. Was that Foundation?
That's Foundation.
Okay.
Foundation, yeah. And the funny thing is Foundation is actually in the spot that Main Beer Company started in.
Interesting. I didn't know that. When I went there, I had the opportunity to have their Oktoberfest, and that beer stuck in my head so much because it was, mind you, it was the fourth or fifth brewery we were at by that time, but still an amazing beer.
They've got the Stein Hoisting competition tomorrow. So the Stein Hoisting competition is going tomorrow.
Robert, what's your final question?
I guess real quick, just a quick shout out to my friends in New Hampshire, Brian and Lydia, who will be celebrating their anniversary in the coming weeks. And definitely a shout out to Portland, Maine, as going out there for the wedding. We got to experience the three-state meal in having breakfast in New Hampshire, going to Portland, Maine for lunch, and then driving to Boston for dinner. So definitely without a shadow of a doubt, I mean, Portland was an awesome town. I still have my Black Dog Martha's Vineyard mug that I still use at my desk at work. So all of that. But my final question has nothing to do with beer. My question is, most underrated punk rock group that you wish got more attention? Because I believe you listen to punk rock.
I listen to a lot of punk rock. Most underrated. Every band I listen to, I don't think are underrated because I love them. There's a band called Anti-Nowhere League. Anti-Nowhere League, they're gritty, they're dirty, they're offensive. But yeah, they're a great band. Second, I mean, Charge DBH is a band that I've been listening to since I was probably about 12 years old. You know, they're just great, freaking, like, you know, chaos punk.
Yeah, nice. There it is.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with my final question because we talked briefly, and I feel like we could probably do three or four more shows to get through all the questions we want to ask. But we talked briefly about your craft cocktails for your RTDs. Dogfish Head has an entire line of spirits. What is your favorites of the spirits that they have, and what is a good cocktail you make from them? Or do you, or neat, your choices? Choices yours.
Can you pause for a second?
Can I pause for a second? I can talk a lot too. Nick, what did you think of this blood orange, by the way?
I thought it was fantastic. I didn't know what to expect, but you think it's too sweet? I think it's spot on.
All right, so we've got the gin. So that's a holy man after gin. My heart.
And just a straight up gin and tonic on this guy.
I'm one of those weirdos that I love gin straight. Maybe a little chilled.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, and I agree. I agree. Honestly, it's like gin and tonic, but I mean just a touch of tonic, and it's just kind of gets perfect. Particularly with this guy, because I mean this is like whole leaf. It's hop infused. So,
is there any plans for distribution outside of the area? Maybe to Michigan of the spirits.
TBD.
TBD.
Yeah.
Fair.
I'll say, like, with a smile, TBD.
Well, I'm always looking for a new beverage to drink. That's going to do it better on draft. $2.99, right, guys. We're almost at $300. We can feel it. Dogfish Head, you guys have a brewery and a brew pub out there, correct? Where is everything at?
We do. In Milton, Delaware, we got the brewery. The original brew pub was in Rehoboth. That has been raised. That's now we now have Chesapeake in Maine, which is the seafood. That's my dog. Sorry. We have Chesapeake in Maine, which is our seafood restaurant. And we built a big new brew pub, which, you know, houses like, you know, a beautiful stage for like fans to play and things like that. So it's going off down there in Rehoboth.
All right, you can find them on socials. You can probably find them at your local store. CJ, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. If you guys haven't had the opportunity, they actually have a book out that you can get, The Dogfish Head, 26 Years of Off-Centered Adventures. There's actually some information about CJ and his wife, who used to work over at Dogfish Head as well. So go check that out. Go grab the book. We appreciate you coming on. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Peace.